Okay, average of 42 queries per minute across the whole server farm, and I'm sure I don't have to tell everybody, but it's probably worth saying that these figures represent only a subset of enum queries, because due to normal DNS caching, obviously these servers don't receive all the queries. Okay, the following stats are now based on only ns-pry.ripe.net again. We weren't able to get a deep enough amount of detail from all the operators to provide this level of stats, so we did it just for our own servers. Shown on the graph is the top 10 delegations that we received queries for at ns-pry. As you can see, Germany and Austria are at the top of the list. But then now recently coming into the list with the North American numbering plan. Germany's averaging 0.74 queries per minute on our server. And again, obviously these numbers are a subset of all queries. Queries for undelegated zones. We did these stats at the last RIPE meeting, and I don't think this has changed much since then, really. I mean, basically Russia, Belgium, New Zealand, Turkey are the front runners, followed by a few others. Invalid queries we also looked at on our server, and we see a total of 6.6% of all queries are invalid, which I think is quite a high level, really. Total of nearly 26,000 queries in 1 month. These were mainly made up of queries that were prefixed with a 0 or a 0.0, but also missing separators were there, strange prefixes like plus, and incorrect prefixes for country codes that just don't exist. We're putting this down probably to misconfigured equipment. Improvements we made recently, all the new requests for delegations that come into the Registration Services Department are now checked with the Delegation Web Checker, and all updates now are checked automatically by the DNS provisioning system, so things are a lot more automated and easier. We have ongoing DNS quality checks in development run as a proposal in the DNS working group at the moment. This will mean checking all delegated servers for lameness, basically. This will apply to both all the reverse zones and the E164 bit upper zone. I'll be talking about that a bit more in the DNS working group this afternoon. Also, we have now we now accept glue for both IPv4 and IPv6 in the domain object in the right database. If you want to see an example of this, you can look at 1.8.E164.ARPA. As you can see, the three end server attributes there have got glue, one with IPv6 and one with two with IPv4. I'd like to give a short plug for the RIPE NCC DNS MOM project. This shows DNS performance, and it's for any server or any zone. It's quite a configurable view that you can look at, and it's distributed monitoring, so it's not just monitored from the RIPE NCC here in Amsterdam. It's spread across lots and lots of servers in the TTM cloud all over Europe and parts of the rest of the world as well. So you can see a clear, if you look at any one server, you can see a clear picture of how that's performing across different parts of the internet. You can take a look at stuff, the servers that are already monitored at dnsmom.ripe.net. There are a few, I think all the E164.ARPA name servers are in there, and there are a few of the delegated ones, like Austria's in there, for instance. But if any of you are in charge of servers and are interested in them also being monitored, then you can drop an email to the email address shown, and we'll get back to you. And that's the end of our presentation. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them now. Also, I'll be around in the corridors for the next couple of days. So if you need to talk about DNS or enum, then I'm happy.
Before we take any questions,
sorry,
can I ask anybody who has questions to start by telling us who they are? Because the people who are listening to the audio cast of this will want to know who's talking. And also the kind volunteer who is taking the notes will want to know who to write down. Thank you.
Patrick Feldstrom. Did you just say that you were starting to do lameness checks on delegations from the parent's home to the child?
We are proposing to do so. We are not starting to do so yet.
But you are taking the initiative?
Yes.
My name is Peter Koch. You had a slide showing these strange queries, including those starting with a plus.
Yeah.
And your suggestion was that this is due to misconfiguration. I'm a bit more concerned that it is not just a misconfiguration, but a complete misimplementation of the DDDS algorithm. Did you further look into this from how many different sources these queries originated? Or
no, but I have all the stats. We can talk about it offline. I can...
Or make it an action item.
Or make it an action item, yeah. Okay. We have all the stats, so yes, we can. We didn't look into any further, but we can do, yes.
So it's... The suggestion is to look into that to find out whether it's really a misconfiguration or a misimplementation that should be addressed right now instead when it, next time you show this 90% of the queries are garbage, making this root server-like.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Carsten Schiefner, you mentioned that the NCC now has been able to gather statistics from all the primary server, of course, anyways, but also from our secondaries. Will there be further efforts to actually get statistics broken down on a per E164 country code? Or is that like just too complicated to get these stats as well?
I don't think it's necessarily too complicated. We did try to do this during this this effort. Unfortunately, some of the providers don't have the resource to be able to run these stats on their machine, as well as the other functions the machine's doing. Also, some of them are very wary about it from a data privacy point of view.
Okay. So
some of them did provide enough detail for me to give stats, but they all wouldn't, definitely.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi. Leo Vigoda here. I'm asking a question for Otmar that's come in on the Jabber. And the question is, please get the DNS performance of the Chinese server up to speed or provide glue for them. And resolving e164.arpa.cnnic.net.cn is quite broken.
I know that the Chinese already have plans to move the service to a different server. I don't know whether that will address all those problems, but I know that there are plans to move it, because I'm in contact with somebody in China at the moment about specifically that. But yes, we can take that as an action item if required as well and look into it. No problem.
Okay. Thanks, Brett.
No problem.
I think... I think that leads us nicely into the next item under point B or point C of the agenda, which is Carsten has something to say to us. It was going to be a proposal, but I think it's gotten a bit fuzzier since, about DNS quality in the enum area, and particularly in view of the last question to Jabber, this seems to be topical. You have a slide for this, Carsten?
Yep.
Yeah. Let me see if I can try and find it for you. Do you want to start talking while I'm finding the slide?
There we go. Once more, good afternoon. In the absence of any better idea, I call it the Enum DNS Quality Task Force. This was something from like two rep meetings ago, triggered basically by events when a complete country code delegation, E164 country code delegation, was lame not only for a day or two, but for an entire week. And people started to complain about it. And eventually I had an action item in the DNS working group, which reads like this. And I tried to approach this action item by just assembling some people for an ad hoc task force, I'd like to call it, basically initially only round off the problem space and to eventually also start to propose possible solutions to the Enum working group. And Peter and I have discussed that a little bit, and he's happy to close off that DNS working group action item and to move it to the Enum working group. The issue of ongoing, Brett already mentioned that a little bit for the general DNS-based RIP NCCs in charge of, which basically is reverse mapping. And the issue here is not merely technical, but also political. And so we thought the ad hoc task force is composed accordingly. And no, not as in lawyers. The thing is, we also thought that similar efforts, for example, the proposed lameness checks by the NCC, IANA delegation checks, should be watched and synchronized with. And what we've done so far, and that is the next slide and also the last slide, this ad hoc task force, prior to this meeting, met by email and for a lunch meeting during this meeting. And our first thoughts about it were it's rather impossible, actually, really, to tell or even mandate an ENOM Tier 1 registry to be compliant to certain operational requirements. You hardly can do that. And so therefore that directly follows from that there can't be any sanctions. One solution we thought about it so far would be to just write a document containing operational recommendations in brackets. That is how we would run it, and to spread that word and actually trying to assist and to help registries in case some problems are perceived. And another idea was to encourage Tier 1 registries, for example by DNSMon, but also by other things, to let themselves be monitored by third parties, whoever that third party is. And another suggestion actually was that maybe these third parties can be a part of a perceived or yet to be established Tier 1 registry peer group, if you would. We definitely consider that ongoing work, and I hope I can report some progress at RIP 45 and also, of course, on a list in between if necessary. And the idea really is to get some kind of like a blessing by the working group here, whether the approach to have a task force for that is really the way to move forward. So if I would be happy to get some reaction from the floor. Maybe a hum or something in favor of a task force? Yeah? Okay. Not even a hum.
Okay, before I let Andrei Robichevsky ask a question, I have a question for Carsten myself as chair. Does that mean that item 53.2 is to follow up this activity on the list, and that this is resting on your shoulders, Carsten?
Okay,
that makes it easier for Alex. Andrei.
Andrei Robichevsky, RIP NCC. Carsten, a question. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's rather impossible to tell or even mandate the NUM T1 registry to be compliant?
If Jim Reed is in the room, he can probably answer that better than Carsten Schiefner.
Jim Reed, the answer to that is not a technical, it's political. The new server infrastructure for a Tier 1 is run by a country according to that country's rules and how they see fit. And that becomes an issue of national sovereignty. So I don't think it's the business of the NCC or anybody else telling somebody else how they should run their name servers.
But my question is rather, can part at least of this issue be brought into technical plane rather than political plane? Because I understand that delegation to a particular entity in the country is a political issue, but running DNS services is probably partly a technical issue.
It is a technical issue, but if you look at it from a government perspective, if a government decides, our decision is that we will delegate our email number space, but we will provide defective DNS infrastructure for whatever reason, they're perfectly entitled to do that, and no one should be able to tell them otherwise.
Patrick Feldstrom?
Patrick Feldstrom. And this is one of the reasons why I asked the previous question whether RIP NCC took the initiative or not to do this lameness delegation check. Because there's a very, very, very big difference between whether the country, the administrator, or directly or indirectly ask the RIP NCC or anyone else to please notify them when something is broken, and to have someone telling a country when they're doing the wrong thing.
Carsten Schiefner here, as an add-on for that, I guess the original initiative by the NCC for lameness checks was for the reverse mapping space only.
Yeah, and let me just continue that regardless of who takes the initiative, of course there is interest of having some kind of technical document, which is some kind of sort of recommendation, handbook, whatever they say. This is today what people think is a proper way of running DNS, absolutely. So I think what Jim and I talk about is not that technical part. Mm-hmm. We can discuss whether that has succeeded. We have probably like enough of that paper as well. And even the technical community have not really agreed on what is the proper way of running DNS. But how that is applied, I think that is what Jim and I like just raise some warning flags about how that document is used.
Quick word from Jim before Daniel's question.
Thank you, Neil. Just to amplify that, I think the way that many governments will look at this is it's not an issue of DNS, it's an issue of telephone numbers, and telephone numbers are a matter of national sovereignty. So technically we're correct, it's about protocol and operational issues in the DNS, but that's not the way this will play in other circles.
And last question from Daniel Karenberg.
Yeah, I agree. I fully agree with Patrick. I mean, and what Carsten has said. What you want to see once some best current practices agreed and written up, and that's not telling any country on how they should run their DNS, but it's suggesting good current practice. The other thing is, I'm slightly, being from the RIPE NCC, I'm slightly uncomfortable with this total hands-off approach that is suggested by Patrick and Jim, because in the DNS space that's just not how it works, because in any other constellation I can think of, the parent registry has some rules actually. And I think even cite chapter and verse, but I think there's actually some requirements to have at least two name servers and things like that, even in the tier zero registry. So it's not quite that black and white. Yeah. And why am I uneasy about this? Is because the RIPE NCC runs a tier zero. Mm-hmm. And any really bad quality falls back on the RIPE NCC, because if I'm not mistaken, we were getting, and just indirectly also here from a remote participant, getting flack for stuff not working. So I think the RIPE NCC is quite entitled to actually make strong suggestions. So I don't think the point of view of Jim and Patrick is 100% valid.
I'd like to make a comment myself, taking my chair hat off for a second, and that is that as I see it, there's a delicate balancing act there. If there isn't a safety net, it's a bad thing. If the safety net is used in such a way that seems to be infringing on what Jim calls national sovereignty, that's probably a bad thing too. So it's a delicate and difficult balancing act. And I see a queue of people behind the other microphone, and I think we maybe have enough slack to have a very quick comment from each of them.
Okay. I just want to go back to
Jim Reed, is it?
Yeah, Jim Reed, sorry about that. I fully agree with what Daniel was saying, and what Neil said is it's going to be a very difficult balancing act here, but I think the NCC has to be very, very careful in each of its role as the Tier 1 registry operator here. Off the top of my head, I don't believe there was anything in the IB's instructions to RIPE NCC for operating that registry that said anything about lame delegation checking. I don't believe there's anything in the MOU that's written between the NCC and ITUT about lame delegation checking. And I think if NCC is perceived to be exceeding its authority for some vague definition of authority, that could be the sort of thing that gets us into trouble.
Thanks, Jim. Olaf?
Well, of Goldman, and Nalat Labs. Not continuing on the previous issue, but on the BCP that Daniel mentioned, I think that it is more important to provide a set of absolute minimum requirements than to say this is the bar that you want to reach, but this is the bar you want to step over in order to at least be good. And you can do better, but this is the absolute minimum. I think that is the document we should be aiming for.
I think I'd like to thank you, Olaf, for putting it so succinctly, because it helps all of us, and it helps Alex especially writing it down. That sentence has been put together so well, and it's a strong message from this meeting. Hey, sometimes you get lucky. Fine. With that, we move on to the field report section of the agenda, and in no particular order, the next presentation will be from Andre Philippe from NICTCZ.
You're starting with this.
Okay, I got 5 minutes. I will try to be as short as possible. My name is Andre Philippe. Good afternoon. I'm the general manager of the CZNIC. First of all, I will very briefly introduce my company. CZNIC is his main task is to manage dtopoverdomain.cz. It was founded in 1998. It's an open association. Czech Republic now has about 268,000 domains. And I don't think we are somehow surprising. It's a standard registry as we are used to. So we have registrars, registrants. We have available models, so everybody can register the Czech domain name. If you have some problem in Czech domain space, you don't have to go to Czech court. You can use the AGL procedure, and it's the same court as is used for the .eu, so it can serve in all official languages of the European Union. And the number of domain name is rising quite quickly. This year was quite accelerating for us, and we have website, and the website is strictly bilingual, so you can read all documents we prepare in English as well. What's our topic today is Enum, and I wanted to have the presentation because the situation in Czech Republic changed two weeks ago. We started the public user Enum. Well, the situation in telecommunication world is that our national prefix is +420. +420 was used for Czechoslovakia after the split. We got a zero after that. We have closed numbering plan. That means we have fixed length of number. It's nine digits. The national number has nine digits, except special numbers starting with the digit one. And CZNIC is a Enum registry. The derogation zone happened in the June 2003, and nothing happens that time. We called that phase pre-trial phase. We made some manual registration of a few domains, and it was not used at all. Key point for us was April 2006, when we signed memorandum with our Ministry of Informatics, and in this memorandum is written that we can go to commercial phase, that we can move on. So we move on, and in 20th of September, we launched Enum into the trial phase. So everybody in who has some telephone number with the prefix +420 can register domain name. We have quite precise plan how to go on. We don't want the trial phase to be very long, because we believe that Enum is proven technology. So what we are only thinking of, or what we are, let's say, debugging is the procedures inside the registry and nothing else. So we would like to launch the commercial phase in January 2007, and we don't want to empty the database. We hope that this change will be smooth. What does it mean, the trial phase, for us? That means we try to set up as liberal conditions as possible. So the registration is absolutely free. We use the same model as for the domain. Now we have four not very active registrars, and everybody can register one of those numbers written there. Geographical use for classical PSTN, mobile phones, the phone numbers for free calling, the 800s, and some premium rate and value added services. And in Czech Republic we have prefix dedicated to voice over IP, which is not used actually because there are some problems that some operators don't route it. But also those number is possible to register. Maybe one point which is just a little bit weird, or if you have organization with more numbers and you have some prefix, you can register all prefix at once. So that's why on our pages you can see the statistics that are written that we have about 320,000 phone numbers in the database, but it's split into, and I think the actual number is 152 domains. This number is from yesterday. So we have 150 domains in 2 weeks, which is probably nothing excellent, but it's a beginning. And what we are working now, all the technical job is done, so we are working now mainly on communicating with end users and some sort of evangelization. So we are in touch with all newspapers, journalists, so we had a small interview in TV, trying to go to radio and making them public things. We are working on making our website as precise as possible. You can look, it looks like a sale web. It's we try to be a little bit modern in that way. And most important is we are trying to get some telco operators to support DNM. Today we have just support from two of them, and of course the CESnet, the university network, which is perfect, but it's a small number. And we are a little bit working, or we are not perfectly happy with the validation procedures, because we are afraid that validation twice a year, which is necessary in our number plant conditions, will not make the end users happy. And we are preparing for the commercial phase. For the first year, I think it has a mistake, that should be 2007. For first year, we make a promo action, so you can register the domain name for just 1 Czech crown, which is about 4 euro cents, and that could be quite cheap, I hope, for the end users. And the last item we are working on is preparing for infrastructure enum. That's more political question. So we set up a working group in our telco association, and we are talking with the operators whether they would be happy with such activity. And that's all.
Thank you. Carsten Schiefner. Could you go one or maybe two? No, yeah, right. You're saying use type of numbers, so I could register a premium rate and value-added service number in theory, but it would still be open why I should do so, because, okay. And the other one was...
None is registered yet. Mm-hmm. All the numbers are mobile and geographical numbers.
Yeah. Well, I actually really would be surprised if like a premium rate number holder would actually register this number in enum, but well, you never know.
It's just an option name.
The other question is, if you go to commercial in 2007, will you clean the entire trial database, as in you start all over with registration, or will you just, as the Finns obviously have done or chosen for? Oh yeah, okay, I missed that one. Sorry.
We hope that the change will be just in the change of the name, but
yeah.
We will continue on the same platform and with the same registration.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Jim Reid, quick question. What are your plans to incorporate the working group's thoughts on DNS quality and monitoring into your enum operations?
Sorry, I didn't get your question.
What are your plans for incorporating this working group's thoughts or considerations on DNS quality and on monitoring of your Tier 1 name servers into your email operations in the Czech Republic?
We have no plans on that. We'll think of it.
Okay. My name is Shin of NIT of Korea. I just want to know about, your commercial phase, because you don't want to, erase your database even in the trial phase. After that, commercial will begin. So you will use, the registration was before by trial users. So is there any kind of a validation of users about their numbers and kind of things?
Yeah, the trial phase is a normal commercial phase just without the payment. So yeah, there is normal validation. The registrars have to prove the validation and so on. So it's like a commercial phase, just accept the payment.
My second question goes to because when I watch your web page, you're saying that it's pre VIP services. So the test users now are using freely, without any charge of their call. Is it possible? Because in Korea, when we made a trial, so we have to face some kind of list line for the trial users. So is it possible for users to make a free call without any charge of registries in CJ?
The sentence on the web page is maybe a little bit more hard to catch your eye, so it's not the real technical sentence. Yeah, you can use it for free, you can call free and you can register it for free, yeah.
Thanks, Sanjay.
Thank you. Close and next. Can we, Jim? Would you like to go next?
Okay.
Oh, sorry, there's a window view full screen. Might be nice.
Control L.
Okay. Also, yeah.
Thank you very much. Just to say that this sound version of this talk is. This is a repeat of the one I gave at the last right meeting, just by adding 3-4 months to the dates. The UK ENAM Consortium Limited is going to be formed as a non-profit limited by guarantee company, and the paperwork for that should be completed on Monday next week. There are 4 interim directors, I'm one of them, Nigel Tootley is acting as one, and so is John Souter, CEO of Lynx. And the other is Adrian Snell, who's been active in the UK ENAM Group pretty much since its outset. The company has been recognised by the Department of Trade and Industry as the entity responsible for ENAM in the United Kingdom. And this has been one of the reasons why there's been a kind of a delay here, because some voices in the UK ENAM Group wanted the UK ENAM Company Limited to have official recognition, official status by the government. The problem from the government's point of view is they can't give that kind of official recognition because the delegation of the UK ENAM zone 44E164 DARPA is not covered by any contract or treaty. So as far as the government's concerned, this is not something the government owns. It's not something the government can give away. Therefore, they can't write a letter saying we authorise this person as being the thing responsible for it. So this has been a kind of a difficult thing to get round, but we have a kind of, probably the best thing to call it is a memorandum of understanding, which the lawyers and the DTI are happy with and the members of the UK ENAM Group are happy with. So the sort of things this company is going to be pressing ahead with in the months, in the coming months, is issuing the request for proposals for Tier 1 registry operations. We have a document which is just about complete for that. Adrian had produced a version a while ago, and we're going to try and incorporate stuff from some of the RFP documents which have come out from other countries as well. We also have to look at the governance structure for this organisation, how its board is constituted officially. Ultimately, the plan is the 4 interim directors will resign and be replaced by directors that are appointed or elected by the membership. But of course, we have this usual catch-22 situation, is that until the members can join a legal entity, how can they be elected to join the board? Well, we have to have a legal entity with directors before you can decide who the members are going to be. So we have to get that problem taken care of, and we also have to migrate into a structure which is broadly aligned with how the DTI consultation exercise specified the governance structure, which is how they thought ENAM operations in the UK should be overseen. Also, we have to look at funding issues to try and run this thing, presumably some sort of paid secretariat, some legal work will need to be done and stuff of that nature, and of course hopefully those will be seen by membership funds or some other way of raising revenue in order to actually keep this organisation alive. I should point out, of course, is that the government's attitude all along in this is that ENAM is an industry thing, it's not for government. The government doesn't want to regulate or control this, they just want to make sure that it operates in the broad public interest with fairness, no artificial barriers for entry and all that usual good stuff. So this is the latest likely timelines, and this is the stuff I said, add 3 months to what I said at the last right meeting. So we expect the RFP to come out towards the end of this year. Fingers crossed, December seems like a likely date for that. It might slip to January, but I hope not. The plan is the actual cost for the request for proposal exercise will be met by the applicants. The UKEC Limited, the company, will appoint a panel of independent experts to oversee the bids that will come in from likely applicants for the bid. And of course those experts will have to be paid, there'll be legal work involved that and contractual negotiations. So let's say for argument's sake the cost of the RFP exercise is £100,000 and there are 4 applicants, each of those applicants will pay £25,000. But whether it costs £100,000 or £100, I don't know. But the cost of this will be a revenue neutral operation, but the cost will have to be borne by the applicants one way or another. So assuming that works out, we have the RFP being completed or the responses to the RFP handled, say, round about January next year. We'd expect to have announced round about January, February that the Tier 1 registry operator had been appointed for a period of probably 5 years in the UK. There should then be some kind of launch event or workshop to try and promote this inside the United Kingdom and to create awareness of what's been happening and encourage others to participate and become members of the UK ENAM consortium, and that time is likely to be around about the end of Q1 next year. And assuming we don't have any sort of speed bumps with our chosen registry operator, I would hope that commercial operations could start around about Easter time next year. Perhaps going out towards the summer if things don't quite go according to schedule. One other quick thing I just wanted to bring up to date is this strange ID we have in the United Kingdom called CREW, Carrier Registrations and User ENAM. The basic idea is that to try and populate the UK tree with data is that rather than do validation on individual telephone numbers, which is how things pretty much have to be done, is a telephone operator can go along and say, I've got this block of numbers from the regulator, let's say 10,000 or 100,000 numbers from the regulator, that's in the public database. So we can validate that by going to the Ofcom database and saying, yes, these numbers belong to this telephone subscriber, or telephone operator rather. And then what we can do is populate for every single one of those, let's say 50,000 numbers, 2 NAPTA records, one a tell URI pointing back at the actual telephone number, and one being a SIP URI or some other voice over IP type URI of some sort. The idea for the tell URI being is that if the communications device can't use the form of communication that's advertised, let's say it's MMS or SMS or SIP or whatever, they can always fall back in the PSTN and dump the call that way. So it's a fallback position. We've had some interest in this from a number of telcos, and a couple of UK telcos are actually using this just now, albeit on a fairly small scale with sort of 1,000 block number ranges, but it is actually in use and appears to have been gaining some degree of interest, and we think this was a potential way forward. The government is also quite happy with ideas in principle, because what we'll say is that even though the numbers are entered into this scheme, is if I've had a telephone number in one of these blocks that's been entered, whenever I go along to my telephone company I can say, please delegate this number to me, so I can go the full authentication cycle and then have the number delegated to me. So in technical terms, the 2 NAPTA records that are in the zone will be replaced by NS records pointing at the name servers running my content for myself. And of course there's some other corner case to do with number portability between operators, but that's a detail which you can do by looking at the paper. Any questions? Okay.
I have one.
Carsten Schiefner again. Could you give us an answer to, well, your question you've asked to Andre in his presentation, as in, is external DNS monitoring part of the RFP?
It will be, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Jim. And next I'd like to ask Shin to come and tell us about what's going on in Korea and neighboring parts of the world. And I'm not sure, what was your file name? Which half of your name was the one that was...
It starts with Shin. Or, you know, KR.
Ah, yeah. It's yours. And you're unfortunately already at this stage.
Right, okay. All right, I'll do it very briefly. Good afternoon, my name is Song Shin. I'm working in the NIDA, National Internet Development Agency of Korea. We are an internet registry, you know, CCTLD, and we are also IP reallocators from APNIC, and we are all doing all kind of promotion things in Korea for internet development things. I'm doing some brief note about, you know, situation in Korea and our neighboring countries, including Japan and China. Not North Korea this time, because they are very busy in making nuclear facilities, so because there's a lot of threats from that. So, right, let me go on. This is my contents. I'll do a briefly talk about Inamin KR and Inamin CN in Japan. I don't get much information from China and Japan because they are in that kind of hibernating period for their Inam project, so they have not drawn much attention from people, so they are doing some kind of research and development right now. History so far in Korean Inam. We made a Korean Inam Forum in 2001. We started our first trial service in 2003. We just want to prove our concept of, technical availability, feasibility. This is really going, okay with the kind of, it's really going well with kind of Inam DNS or Inam kind of registration. So we try to make this, developments. So we are really a little bit of success in our, first trial service. We gather more than 10,000, more than 1,000 registration, which is public, from public users, which is just a trial basis. But and then we tried a second trial, which is extended form of our first trial service. We did throughout 2005. We didn't make any kind of, fun period of because second trial, because we didn't so much, expectation from our first trial. So we just wanted to make a kind of, some research and development, period for the second trial. Finally, national code being delegated to an NIDA with hundreds of documents to the government in May 2005. We had to start to discuss about internet, infrastructure Inam from last year. This is a brief a diagram of our extended trial service in 2005. People can use a lot of gadget like PC and PDA and all the kind of terminals like IP phones. People can maybe enjoy their free call because we are fed some list line free call with the Inam DNS, so which but that drew not much attention from people because people have no interest in using Inam because they can use everything with their mobile phones with our wireless things, so it's not so easy to get people's attention on the Inam trial. This is the way we think to have this year in 2006. We want to go both ways to infrastructure Inam and user Inam. The model of infrastructure Inam is just want to prove the technical availability of infrastructure Inam for Inam core routing with using Inam DNS. So we have some participants, NIDA also, and we have some exchanges have they are involved, and some VIP companies like Dreamline, SK Networks, which is a little bit bigger than small companies in Korea, because I will do some brief about in VIP industries, the next hit. They are one of kinds in the VIP industries. So they want to make a business bigger, So they want to join our, the project this time. So we started our service period for infrastructure last week, but it's just a starting state. So I don't know I don't gather any kind of information about our first trial service of infrastructure today. So the proposal of infrastructure project is to see technical feasibility of internet telephony co-routing based on Enum. We just want to have some kind of technical watch about technical availability of Enum co-routing by infrastructure Enum. So this all kinds of projects is funded by government. Without any government help, it's not so easy to get this kind of project because it costs a lot of money. So we have to evaluate after trial time. So there's some criterion for the trial. So the success rate of co-writing must be larger than 95%, because it's also the license criterion for the ITSP, Internet Telephone Service Providers in Korea. I rather say we almost give up user enum because we did a second times on our user enum trial. We didn't get a lot of much attention from people, so we didn't see any kinds of passability nowadays. So we are still discussing about the passability enum. So it's not so easy to get an answer. But I just envy the CZ because they get almost 300,000 people already. So, but we just gather just 10,000 or 1,000. So, but this year is criteria for the registration is about 10,000 numbers. So, but we expect it's not easy. This is user enum scenarios. We just added some service, which is very the plain service in a web portal and wireless portal. We just added another kind of a service like a mapping service to find a route to special locations. So we can do that with the enum service and with the help of mobile web service providers. This is Impra Enum test network, which is test basis. So NIDA and another Korean internet exchange, they are doing enum DNS and backup DNS. Dreamline, they are VIP providers. SK Networks, one of the big VIP providers, they are joining forces with this test network. They are using making test SOAP switch, and then they are using their commercial SOAP switch together to make enum co-routing to PSTN on our mobile network. You might heard about clearinghouse before actually, but we want to think another definition of an enum as an infrastructure. So we want to we are highly thinking of clearinghouse as possibilities for infrastructure enum nowadays, because internet telephony is a regulation kind of a rule is quite sticky in Korea. So there's a lot of providers, but actually we have a lot of VIP facilities, which is very well organized. But actually, a lot of telcos doesn't want to have a VIP industries kind of TT, because they have a lot of VIP infrastructure, but they don't want to promote their VIP services to the people because they can get a lot of money from PSTN. In Korean telephony, internet telephony, we have 9 facility-based providers like KT.com, Hanalo, and there are big companies like ISPs. And we have 140 resellers. They are using, rendering some sort of facility from facility providers. And we just decided for a fix for the internet telephony 070, which is very similar to the 050 in Japan. And there's some license issues. The facts, is that the facility-based providers must have more than 60 points of interconnection to the PSTN and the mobile network, which is very hard for the small companies to get that kind of facilities and that kind of contract. So we have 9 firm-based, facility-based providers. We have 140 resellers. They need to have minimum 12 point of interconnection to PSTN and a minimum one point of interconnection to the mobile network like SKT and KTF. But ITSP, they can interconnect via internet each other. The problems we have in internet telephony in Korea, we have too complicated interconnection and billing system because they almost every company have POIs to another company, so they can bill together, just together, and they have a very, I mean, they can make a contract or they have to make, complicated, contract and interconnection system. And one ITSP needs multiple corporations and systems to interconnect, as I say, in a billing system or interconnection system. Small companies must need to interconnect facility-based companies because they don't have any kinds of facility like PSTN, PPOI, something like that. The internet telephony service providers run mobile MPDB and need trunk gateway and other connection facilities. So it's a kind of problems that we are facing in this year in the internet telephony in Korea. Well, the concept of enum-based grid clearinghouse can solve. We just are thinking that, but actually this is our concept. But this will help international interconnection based on IPs can be easier and system much more can be simpler. Enum can be enrolled as a numbered and portability database, and there's no need to rumble portability database among small ITSPs. And we are doing some. It can be a prepared variation for the internet telephony number portability. In the future. This is the set of plan. We just made a phase set of plan for TFP clearinghouse. First phase, second phase, and third phase. But we just decide. The timeline. But I don't know. We can keep it or not. Present line. You can see in the diagram. This is just that. Yeah. It's the things I explained before in my sheets. In 2007, we will adopt Enum DNS to the VIP service providers, and they can make a call routing by Enum. In our second phase, maybe we will set up some like concept Enum-based VIP calling clearing house to the VIP service providers. And the third phase, it will be started in 2009. Is just expectation? Maybe we have to level up Enum-based VIP clearinghouse to for future plan. It's just our plan. So I'm not sure it can be kept or not. But actually, we are trying too hard to make the kind of phase plan. Issues in this year, we just want to focus on proof of concept of the technical availability of InfraEnum, because InfraEnum just concept. So there's a lot of examples of InfraEnum this year. There's some company like XConnect or other companies who can be a VIP clearinghouse like our kind of Enum database, and we have to prepare documents for governance and other players, because when we get Enum delegation from ITU, I needed to prepare hundreds of documents for providing the governance to other people, other players. So it's very sticky process. Before we go deep into the VIP clearinghouse, we need to learn more about clearinghouse definition, as is OSP and ITU's H225. And we are just start to enter the discussion among ministries and ITSPs and vendors and other related organizations. This is a brief note of a Korean Enum situation. This is China's situation. When I start my presentation, China is in a slow motion right now. They are still doing some research and development about Enum API, something like that. But they are doing some. They have no big development last year. Like they just want to make this year a new application based on video and big card functions. and they are making a PIP authentication validation based on enum, because they have a lot of numbers. They need to have some special validation method to prove, I mean, real users. And they are doing some enum toolbar, I mean, menus like an IP, Internet Explorer and Firefox. Enum Japan, maybe if you have any question, I'll just type the rather correspondent of names, I mean, and their emails, so you can ask them. But actually, Enum in Japan is really hibernated. It's a very similar situation as Korea, because they don't gather a lot of attention from telcos and the users, because Enum can be a little bit harder than they expected before. And they just been delegated from ITU, but they really want to start to discuss about more things on Enum, but they are now in a slow motion. They have a ETJP, Enum Japan Trial. Also, they have Japan Enum Trial, which is conducted by ETJP. Currently, two organizations are participating in that kind of trial, but activities are very limited. And maybe he told me that the interest in Enum still remains, but there is no visible motivation from business aspects. And ETJP is trying to reactivate this activity right now. Yeah, that's all my presentation.
Questions? I think we have time for one question. Good. Then next I'll ask Antoine to come. Before you go, Shin, can I ask you Jim's question? What do you think is the Korean position on having monitoring built into the requirement for the service?
Well, it's very hard to say, but actually I don't disagree with Jim's idea. I better say that.
That's a very that's a wonderful answer. And I think we should end with this one. Yeah.
Good afternoon. My name is Antoine Bossure. I work for SIDN as a technical advisor, policy and business development. I would like to thank Chin for taking a lot of my time, because I actually don't have a lot to tell about the status of Enum in NL. A little bit of history I want to show you first. The Enum history in Netherlands started with a report of the Dutch NLEC group. During which process the delegation was first appointed to our ministry, because they wanted to be sure that nobody else was going to request for it. In the period afterwards, there was no real interest from the market, and especially also because the ones that initiated the whole Enum story in the Netherlands, the group sort of like fell apart. Then in 2005 we saw some renewed interest, and in 2006 SIDN, which is the CCTLD for the Netherlands, .nl, started a new initiative, and as you all see, I saw on the mailing list on the 31st of August, we did a redelegation request. So what's this NLEC report? Well, NLEC is for the NL Enum Group. Participants were ISO, KPN, Ministry, NLIP, which is basically was an organization of joint ISPs, which no longer exists. No one on RIPE-NCC and SIDM, and they created a report in which they gave 12 recommendations of what you should do, how you should implement public user Enum. And this is a URL where you can still download the report in English and in Dutch. And so, well, it's a nice reference, but it's already from 4 years ago. So what did SIDN do afterwards when we saw some renewed interest? Well, SIDN, as I also already mentioned in the report, was prepared to run the registry, but we still had to do a lot of talking. So we participated in a lot of Enum events, we actively contacted stakeholders, we explained a lot to those people, gave presentation, of course for ourselves we had to write a business case. At halfway this year we founded a new organization, it's a foundation, Stichting Enum Nederland, which was going to do all the Enum activities, because we heard from our market that, you know, it's not wise to have .nl and the Enum delegation, all the eggs in one basket. They didn't think that was a great idea. We said, okay, we listen. We already did some infrastructure preparation, so, you know, locate servers and some software and stuff like that. Prepare communications, which was actually quite a hassle, because we already, as the CCTLD, we already gave away the domain enum.nl, so we had to buy it back. And we had to ask for a lot of support for our initiative to convince the people that, you know, it was time to start. So what did we do for the redelegation week? We had, for the redelegation request, we had something like, you know, instead of just talking and not doing anything, we should get this thing rolling. So we got this support from some major stakeholder, AMZIX, ISOC, BTG, which is actually sort of like an organization of large telecom communication holders, so industrial users of telecommunication. VNO NCW was also, which is the Dutch employer organization. And that was very very useful, you know, convincing the Dutch government about, you know, we want to go and do this initiative, and you have to approve it, and these are the parties that will support us. And the process that we had was not wait for explicit consensus, because it's almost impossible, especially in the telecommunication world, to get everybody in a room and all say, yes, we like this. So we said, okay, we do it another way. We are having this initiative, and if you don't object, we go ahead. We intend to go live immediately, so no trial. There's no use to do a trial on technical stuff, because I think there have been enough trials already, and that will work. And the only reason why you should have a trial is to have some administrative procedures verified. But I mean, anyway, if some administrative procedure doesn't work, you change it in half a year or a year anyway. So we did the first Enum redelegation, and that was a nice idea, especially because Wright decided to change the procedure and the templates a week before we intended to do that. So we sort of like we invented our own rules for the redelegation, because the ITU interim procedures were not very clear about them. But so you probably saw that on the mailing list, the ITU accepted our redelegation process, and so there we are. One more thing about the RIPE proposal that also has to do about the new RIPE templates. On the mailing list, there's a discussion at the moment to, you know, we are the Enum registry, and in the RIPE database, there are some that say, okay, you should not be listed there as a non-registry. It's bad marketing. So the suggestion is just, you know, change it to other and read it on the mailing list, and please give us feedback over there. What's next? Okay, so the ministry intends to approve the redelegation. They have already published a paper about that. That publication is open for comments until next Monday. And if nobody objects, or nobody has objections, that tells the ministry, okay, this is a very, very bad idea. We expect the approval end of October. And what we intend to do then is start an independent platform, probably with the Dutch ISOC and ECP. Just, you know, we want to have an independent platform where all the telcos and everybody can give us their vote. So if there are any Dutch interested parties which think they should be heard, please come to the platform, talk to us, try to do some showcases. We will listen there to all the input. So basically the platform is, the consultation is one thing, listen to the input from the market, and the other thing is, you know, try to get the parties together to do some showcases, some promotions, some knowledge sharing, etc. So we expect to have an operational registry in the second quarter of 2007. And I think I will have more on that on RIPE 54, because actually the consultation is not over yet, so I cannot tell you any real details. Any questions? Oh, and to answer the question of Jim, yes, we're happy to do so.
I was going to ask that one.
Okay.
It's the Antoine, Jim Leith again. Question is to do with your consultation thing that the government's doing. You've got, if I understand correctly, there's two things. There's one is a consultation on the redelegation request for comments in by Monday.
Yep.
And then there's going to be some kind of future meeting where people can come together and comment on the general plans.
Exactly, yes.
Is this only from people from the Netherlands or anybody else?
It's an open platform.
Okay, thank you.
Jabber?
Yeah, I have two questions from Jabber. And they're actually relating to earlier presentations. They slightly missed the question slots because of the delay between the webcast and the real life. The first question's from Otmar Lendl, and he asks, are the SIP URIs in the crew records supposed to point to open SIP server and thus reachable by any caller on the internet?
The answer is the SIP server addresses can point wherever the carrier chooses. We don't care.
And I have another question, also about crew, from Bernie at Switch. In case a user overrides his enum entry as populated by the carrier, what will appear in the zone file you are directly providing, selling to the carriers?
Okay, that was actually one of the questions, so Bernie missed that, is that in the crew scheme, for all the numbers that are block registered, there will be two MAPTA records per number. But whenever the number is actually entered because a user registers, those MAPTA records will be replaced with NS records. It's a pure delegation.
And there don't seem to be any more questions from Jabber at the moment.
Well, that's a good thing, because your chairman hasn't been doing a very good job today and we're way behind time. So the coffee break will suffer because we have two more very interesting speakers. And the next one up is Robert Šiška.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Robert Šiška. I'm managing director of Inumity. We have done pretty much the same job as Antoine has presented here. We also decided to split up the CCTLD business and the Inum registry business in two companies, actually run by the same people and the same technical staff. I will present today our newest service we launched in May. We started with an infrastructure Inum service in Austria. Basically, the reasons we did so is that if you look here at some of the characteristics of user Inum, depending on from what perspective you look at it, there are some major drawbacks from the carrier point of view. The basic idea of the whole user enum is that the end user is in charge of all the entries on the database. It's based on an opt-in procedure. It enables the end user, which personally I like very much, but our perception is that a lot of the carriers doesn't embrace this so much. Also, the validation is a major obstacle and hurdle in a fast rollout scheme for user enum, and we listen very carefully to demands on requests from the carrier side. What should we change? What are the reasons for you not to use user enum, and try to incorporate all this input into the infrastructure enum system. Why another enum? We think that the enum as a technology fits perfect the needs for voice peering. For sure, there are some carriers who are not so eager to use voice peering at all, but there are players on the market who are very much interested in having interconnect on an IP layer instead of using SS7, instead of shopping new expensive SS7 infrastructure just in order to be a member of the club, to be able to interconnect to other carriers. And Enum seems to be a very suited technology to fulfill this, but the needs from the carrier side are definitely a little bit have that another kind of focus than those which are addressed in the user enum. Besides this, you must not think about having user enum database just a mapping between a telephone number and a SIP URI. It can be there can different types of services and entries associated with the number, which can make very much sense for carriers to find into such a database. For instance, traditional routing numbers or informations about tariffs, which may make sense in certain areas to put into the database. requirements from the carrier's point of view. Of course, the mapping from a phone number to internet addresses or other resources, the same as it done in the user union world, but the carriers like to have the full control about who enters data into the database, which kind of NAPTAs are used there. Just think about of it in terms of service level agreements, having the user the ability to change the entry of his number whenever he likes is a nice idea, but opens up really a can of worms for every help desk of every carrier to track down why a certain number doesn't work in a certain period of time. So it's on the one hand, it's a concept which is very hard to communicate to the end user. We're doing a lot of talks all over the world to convince people that user enum is a nice thing to have, but it's really not so easy to transport the idea, what's the benefit and what is needed for it. And the easiest way to sell user enum is just to bundle it as a part of a product. But if you don't find the carriers who are willing to offer this product, then you're a little bit stuck in the geek community, which are really interested in having always the newest and sexiest technical things to play with. So having a separate database where you can make use of this ability to map telephone numbers to internet address, but where the control is strictly on the carrier side, is very much in favor from the telco's point of view. Another thing is that the carriers also like very much the idea to stay in control of the call flow. User enum is very much about having open reachable addresses into the database. With user enum, you're addressing the whole world. Everyone here can make a database query, retrieve a SIP URI, and try to connect to your CPU. It doesn't make too much sense to have to negotiate with everybody who potentially can call you whether you allow phone calls to the CPU or not. In the telco world, the structures are exactly the other way around. You want to know exactly in advance who is going to talk to you and from whom you are about to accept data packets. And therefore, the basic assumption in infrastructure enum is that the carrier can define the rules, who is able to make a connection to his point of interconnect. The same way as this is done in the traditional number 7 TDM world, you don't allow connection from everybody, you have interconnect agreements. These agreements can be, you don't charge anything, up to you charge per minute or whatever you like, depending on data size and packet to the minutes or whatever you choose. But the basic assumption that I put a number in the enum tree and certainly I can make three phone calls there does not necessarily apply to infrastructure enum. Another very important thing is the validation is one of the major obstacles for having a smooth rollout. And also in user enum, there is the need to have an opt-in for every number, every single number. Of course, you can have this kind of number ranges, large numbers assigned to universities, for instance. But nevertheless, every single customer needs to put his data entry into the database. Carriers are very much used to the idea of getting number blocks assigned by the regulator, and they want to put the whole number blocks, the whole number range, at the moment they get the number block assigned into the database, and don't care anymore about it. So you just have to keep track about the number blocks you're assigned and the ported numbers and some very rare special cases. So the provisions expenses should be minimal and it should be usable for all E164 numbers. In Austria, for instance, we have several number ranges who are blocked for user enum. For instance, this value-added services number, just because it doesn't make any sense to have a value-added service number in a tree and to reach it for free. So just have, this slide gives you at a glance the main difference. The user enum has the basic assumption that the user is in charge of the entry of the database. A device which is in control of the user, is a potential in control of the user, makes the query to the user enum database, and for instance in this example, the PBX of the user directly communicates to the PBX of the other party, circumventing all the infrastructure of the carriers. The call flow is not in the control of the carrier. Infrastructure enum is designed the other way around. It should suit the needs of the carriers, so it's used for carriers to make entries and lookups, and the call flow stays under the complete control of the carrier. So on the next slide, I've just summarized the main differences in several aspects between user enum and infrastructure enum. in infrastructure enum, the resource of the carrier is entered into the database, not something which is selected by the end user. The entry is under the sole control of the carrier. The user has no possibility to opt in or opt out or change anything. As the call flow is under full control of the carrier, this basic all business models are possible. So if some, for instance, some voice carriers of similar size decide to go with a bill and keep business model, they're free to do so. It could make sense for some of them. Maybe some other carriers where the size, the difference in size is very, very large, they would choose to go on with charging them for the call flows. Nevertheless, that they are making interconnect on the IP side besides using TDM. And I should stress that here the really interesting part of the whole infrastructure enum really starts, because as we have already heard here several times, the enum technology itself is not very tricky. It's straightforward. There's nothing to try or some to research on it so much. The interesting part starts exactly at the next step. I made a query to the enum database. I retrieved the information that the number could be reached using IP, and I get information to which carrier the call should be passed and where's the point of interconnect. But now the interesting question arises: will this other carrier take traffic from my outgoing point of interconnect? And it is very important to determine before you make the call setup whether the other party will accept your packets or just drop it, because a firewall, for instance, is configured in a way that it doesn't accept traffic from unknown parties. If you just make an enum lookup and put all the packets on the internet or some or what kind of network you would like to use, and hope the other one will give you any information whether he will put up the phone or not, then the user experience will be very, very bad. Because if the other firewall, for instance, just drops the packets, the end user will have the experience to have timeouts of 20 seconds, half a minute or longer. So that's clearly not acceptable. So the really important thing is to have technical mechanisms to determine whether the other party will likely take traffic from your side or not. And that's where I should put you to the concept of the peering federations, which is widely discussed on the IETF and in the Spearmint working group. There's a draft from Otmar Lendl from our company who describes a mechanism how to determine whether the other party is part of a club which will accept traffic from your side before you make the call setup. So I think that's really the area where most of the research work will go on in the next month. Yes, the other thing we have implemented here is that in infrastructure enum it is possible to enroll complete blocks. We have implemented it in a way that the very moment the regulator gives a new number block to a carrier, it automatically is inserted into our database, and the access conditions are set in the appropriate way that only the carrier which the number block has been assigned is able to change the data and insert snapters he wants to use. We also choose to run a different model here. We don't use any delegations. We keep all the NAPTA records in the tier 1 name servers. The main reason for this is that one of the feedbacks we got from several carriers is that they don't like the idea of depend on external databases in the call setup. So with having all the NAPTAs in the tier 1, we are able to provide an entire view of the database to every carrier who wants to subscribe to the database. So if they are free to query our name servers, but if they want to have an in-house copy, they can have, starting from just a replication for a song transfer from the name server up to an export in a special file configuration format they can put into their switches. And that's really one of the things. If you talk to several carriers, they really hate the idea of making an all-call query to an external database with a non-deterministic answer time. That's really one of the crucial things which they hate. We can argue for hours whether this is just a feeling bad criteria or they are not used to do so, but it is definitely one of the things you will face in every talk to each telco. How can I guarantee a call setup within 40 milliseconds by referring to an external database which follows several levels of interaction and several quality of name servers out there. So the quality discussion we had about the tier one name servers, that does also apply to the tier two and three and whatever you like, even more over there tier. Yes, the validation is quite simple as already mentioned. So everybody is just, the idea is everybody can change the entries for his blocks and for the numbers which has been ported to him. So the gaming carrier requests the number which are ported to him, and then he can change the entries for the ported number. One of the things which always arises is where to put this data. So we have chosen to go to the way to put up a separated tree which is totally independent from the user enum tree. The solution you see here on the screen definitely will not win any award for a smart software design, but it definitely will work. It is a hack. I fully commit that it is a hack, but the other thing, the other possibility to go to is this, what to build really up another tree. But this, as all of you might know, this tree will take years to agree on how this node actually should really named and who is in charge of this and so on. And therefore, for the time being, we choose to split the tree below the country code, because that's the point of delegation where the national authority is free to do whatever they like. We insert here the letter I for infrastructure, and then the whole tree starts once again. And the day we are facing this solution, which is very simple to just take the tree, put it into another place here, and it's very, very, very smooth transition, very easy to go. And we think that it's better to go ahead with such a little bit a hack than to wait for 3 to 4 years, discuss how to name the tree, and all the different companies offering commercial voice peering service this day will just have eaten up the whole market, because that's the alternative to this, as I confess once again, a little bit dirty hack. Okay, thank you.
Wolfgang Trammel of DKIX. Is it possible with your solution that different carriers querying your tree get different views?
No. Everybody gets exactly the same view. The concept of infrastructure in them at the moment is that it's a public viewable tree. So everybody sees exactly the same view. Whether they make some kind of split DNS to have an external and an internal view, of course, you're free to do so. And several carriers will do, because, for instance, they run in-house several voice-over IP platforms and maybe want to split it up once again. But from the outside world, it's just one view, and everybody sees exactly the same entries.
Okay. Hi, Robert. Jim Leith. One quick question, and I think something we'll have to discuss over coffee.
Sure. Yeah.
The question is, you talk about provisioning of all this stuff. Are you using wildcards?
We have to use wildcards. As you might know, we are suffering from an open numbering plan. So there is actually no alternative to wildcards to some degree.
Well, we can discuss that. Something for coffee is, I'm interested to have some discussion with you about name server implementations and propagation of the trees around all these name servers in the operator networks. I'm thinking here about how frequently that tree changes, especially when you might have large amounts of data around the zone file is quite large, but that's a discussion for some other time, not now.
Yeah, I have to say I really want to see the large amount of data and the full populated tree and to face these problems first.
Don't worry.
So from a DNS client perspective, if I were to query the infrastructure tree, I would have to know the country numbering plan, wouldn't
yeah.
I? Because I have to figure out where the I is.
Yes, you have to know which country has, with the length of the country code. So you have to know that Austria has a two-digit country code, and Germany 2, and the US 1. That's right. That's a drawback, but I think even in these days, countries do not arise every hour or every week. So it's really a dirty solution. I fully agree, but I think it's a way to go. And if you look how long it takes that countries actually join into this, than just to configure that a new country, maybe as our colleague from the Czech Republic, the split point would be on the third position and not on the second. Yeah, okay, that's a no-brainer to configure this.
There may be other alternatives.
I think everybody agrees that at the end of the day it should be a separate tree. There have been a lengthy discussion in the ITF. I think Peter was there and knows it quite well. And the so-called Dallas Treaty was more or less to go with this solution as an interim solution, and whenever a more clever solution arises, to change it. And I think it's, once again, it's a no-brainer to change the epics on this thing. It's, that doesn't really hurt. But from the aesthetic side, I don't like it either.
Peter Koch, who is not going to discuss wildcards. this kind of infrastructure stuff, You already admitted it is short of protocol porn somehow. So we have been hearing for quite some time now that, oh, it would take years to convince the ITU that this is a good idea and so on and so forth. And we have been hearing that for quite some years now. Has there been effort so far to actually talk to the ITU and start this?
I don't think that the idea of where to put the infrastructure in tree is really there for years. At a certain level that someone is really going, okay, now we're going to start to do this, really. But I agree, no one is really running and fighting for. I will be the first one to convince the ITU to do this, because it really takes a lot of power, and the outcome sometimes is okay. Maybe we should see several countries be interested in rolling out this to give it more power to convince them that this is an issue to address. From the commercial side and from the carrier point of view, They're really not interested how this tree looks like. Yeah, I totally understand that from the technical community wants to have a neat solution. I want to have it also. But the real problems and the things which decide whether this idea is a success or not is the buy-in of the telcos and not how the tree is named. The obstacles really lie on total other areas. And therefore you have to just to decide where to put your forces. And I will not make too much progress in convincing the ITU to have a nice name for this tree. It will not bring Deutsche Telekom or Austrian Telekom to join in and shout, hey, that's exactly the thing we are looking for. So that's not our core problem, to be honest.
No, but one of the problems is having this specification look less brittle, right?
Yeah. But nobody on the carrier land cares about this, really.
You're bad enough.
Yeah, but reality.
I'd like to thank Robert for a very interesting presentation, and also for talking at about 1.25 times nominal speed, which hasn't rescued me from my mistake of... I guess it's further up.
Should be on F.
Yeah. And so... And we still have two more agenda items after Patrick. So apologies to Patrick for putting him in competition with the coffee. My fault.
Okay, so I think it's 20 minutes and we have three items. Interesting. Okay, so anyways, Patrick Feldström, employed by Cisco. And from today, we have a new logotype. I had to work all morning to use the new PowerPoint present anyways. So nowadays, it looks like this. The picture, by the way, is a little bit hard to see, but one of the problems with Inam is, of course, we wanted to solve the problem to know where we're supposed to go. And on Gothenburg International Airport, I found this arrow which told me where internet was. I really, really like that. Internet is in the same direction as SAS operation and the passport control. So with Enum, the whole idea with Enum is that it should be possible for me to hand over a business card to people with only one identifier. Okay, that was the goal. A secondary decision we made in the ITF was to choose that identifier was supposed to be a telephone number, an E164. Okay, This implies that if it is the case that they work together with in the IETF or in RIPE or anywhere else or in Geneva, end up being too problematic just because we use E164 numbers, it might be the case that the next version of enum, maybe it's better to just leave E164 numbers as the input identifier and just come up with a different identifier series, just like the number series we use for RFID tags and barcodes. Okay. Who knows? Ah, okay. We have to use a different computer because this is broken Windows and a broken PowerPoint.
Oh dear. He's coming with a real computer. Yeah.
This is for you?
Yes.
And I won't need it for the other two agenda items, so it's okay.
So the interesting thing is that I try to use PowerPoint to get something that is compatible.
One suggestion. Since you've discovered that the internet is in the same direction as the pass control, we can use passport numbers for the new universal identifier.
Is it this way? Okay, so let's try it once again. Let's just kill that thing. Okay, so anyways, so the whole problem is, of course, in completely different layers than what we are working on. And the largest problem in the IETF is not to talk about how to solve the infrastructure enum problem. It is to know what infrastructure enum actually is and what kind of problem the infrastructure enum try to solve. When working with customers of Cisco and asking what they want and what needs they have, they tell me completely different things than what I hear, for example, in the IETF, which is kind of interesting. And it's also the case that they very often mix up the need for routing of a phone call, which is something that you do, for example, in SIP, or by routing IP packets, and the lookup and address translation, which is enum. And this is something that is discussed in the VoIP peer working group in the IETF, and we'll see what outcome that is. Because of that, even though I'm the editor of many of these documents in enum world, I have not pushed the thing so much in the IETF, just because people simply don't agree on what problem we try to solve. And without knowing what problem we try to solve, it's very, very hard to measure whether we have a solution or not. Anyways, the Dallas Treaty was mentioned, and that is a good document with an agreement between the people that are active in the IETF, and we have at least one path forward that we can work, so that's what we're trying to do. But we have this administrative model that you saw a different version on the t-shirts. Thanks, Leo. But we have done some interoperability tests between the t-shirt and the PowerPoint slide, and we have conformance to independent implementations. So the overall problem, though, is that we have this convergence of telcos that they want to use enum, as we heard, and what telcos want to do is to publish routing information, which is different from actual, like, this is, once again, my interpretation. They want to publish routing information, and they don't want to disclose this routing information to anyone, and they want to give different routing information to different parties. And the question is whether that is something that you solve in DNS at all, or whether it should be solved in different ways. Another problem which we can solve, and which Olaf and myself have discussed, and which is in the works of actually becoming documents, is that enum was always intended for the public. So you had, for example, a SIP service for the user and a SIP server for infrastructure, or a URI for email, and all of those records are stored in the same zone. So you only have one maintainer of all of the URIs. But what we have heard when talking to provider services is that each provider of a service want to maintain the record of want to maintain the record for the service that they provide, and that we hear about infrastructure in Yum, but it's just because the ones providing fixed telephony are the most vocal ones. If they get their specific tree, the next one that will knock on the door are the ones that provide email. And the next ones that are the SIP providers. And the next one are the ones that provide MMS services. And the next one will be et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when we talk about infrastructure in Yum, I think we have to be, we as the one developing the protocol, we have to be careful thinking of why is fixed telephony so special compared to all the other services. So what Olaf and myself have discussed and some others is like, how do you solve the problem, the generic problem of letting anyone having a service for the same telephone number be able to maintain the zone for that number? That is not possible in today's Enum. So it might be the, it might be the case, once again restate this, you might have different application service provider for services, but you only have one delegation. That's Enum of today. It might be the case that we, with infrastructure email as was presented in the previous speaker, we might get two, but how do we know two trees is enough? And I don't care about where the tree actually branches. Is two enough? Do we need four? Do we need 15? Okay. We know now that one is two is not enough. So will a cell phone operator let you maintain your MMS for MMS messages, that URI? Do you want your MMS mail to URI be maintained by your cell phone operator? So like this kind of conflict, and this I think is the core of what people think is infrastructure Enum. So the current idea, and this includes the NIPTL records, which are the records with the U flag are the ones that we are using today. So with four records we also get backward compatibility. The new thing is that we add NIPTL records with a D flag. And the D flag and one another point says that you don't find the URI in this record. Instead, you should look up the URI resource record. Just like the S flag for NIPTR say, you should look up the SRV record. So there are two good things with this. The first one is that we separate the lookup for what services exist for this domain name from please give me back the URI for this service and this domain name. So we look at the NIPTR, we find the records with the D flag, we take the replacement field, not the regular expression, the replacement field and get the domain name, we prefix the domain name with the service field content, where we have changed the order and prefix with an underscore just like SRE records, and we get the records that we have to look up. Okay, the good thing with this is that this is the traditional delegation with the U flag that directly point to the URIs. What we're doing is, in this one zone that exists for the telephone number, we remove that and instead we can do delegations. The good thing here is that we can do either delegations per service, or we can below the number have, for example, underscore ETU for user enum that we have today, and then the infrastructure or whatever. So we can do the delegation after, under the number. But the interesting thing is that, as this example say, it says that the MSG service field flag is delegated to one, can be delegated to one party, and the SIP one delegated to another one. So this is at least possible. So two different kind of questions. What service exists for the domain? What URI should I use for this service? But I don't want to scare anyone, because the only change is that we are adding a URI resource record type that we might need in the DNS anyways, and we add the D flag in the NIPTL records, which might not be launched, but otherwise it just works. So you have the definition of the URI resource record type, draft IETF enum URI 00.txt, me, Olav, and will be Neil O'Reilly, and unfortunately this draft is written in something that might be, maybe for some people, interpreted as written in English, but this is what Neil will help with, so 01 will be much better and easier to understand. And then draft IETF enum 3761biz00.txt will be ready as soon as I updated that document with the UI reference to the UI resource record type. Done. Any questions?
Where's the break?
I think the question about the break isn't for Patrick. Let's have the questions for Patrick first.
The black and white dog does not exist any longer. Now we have cats. So this is my one of my cats. Yes.
Okay. Advanced Hurrez again. I have a question about how you're going to split authority if you, for example, do a delegation on a path for a number block. So if you want to redelegate an instance that is not the complete number for open numbering plans or stuff like that.
Okay, for open numbering plans, there are only two possibilities, and you have that problem already with enum of today. Either you actually you have the equivalent of the number portability administrator running DNS zones for like for the full number and like all the numbers, similar to what they already do. The other alternative is that you can do delegation and split the numbers into like multiple number portability agencies, but it's still the case that those have to be neutral parties. If it is the case that I understand your question correctly.
Exactly. It's more about who gets the authority over which delegation.
Yeah, but that is a problem they have in the telco world today, and that is a problem that we already have in user enum. So unfortunately, I've only seen those two possibilities. Yeah, reverse DNS, yeah. But on the other hand, for the reverse DNS, you don't have the legal requirement on portability for IP addresses between providers. We are asking people to renumber.
You add another level of indirection with, the question is, how are applications supposed to make use of that? Is that beyond the scope, or how do I pick which?
Okay. The idea here is that if you remove the lines in the NIPTO with the U record, the way application can do this is one or two ways. The first way is to look up the NIPTO records for the phone number, just like you do in enum today, and you will get the list of all of those. The other way you can do is, as an application, if you understand SIP, you can take just __sip.__etu.thephonenumber and look up the URI record, and you'll get the URI directly.
So that is within the intention. Okay.
Yes. Another problem that we are trying to resolve is to handle the large resource record sets and make it much, much easier for clients that only understand one or two of these protocols to do a direct lookup and directly get the URI back. Of course, it is a little bit of it might imply, of course, more DNS lookups if you have a client that understand more than one protocol, because then you need to do repetitive queries instead of doing a query and get a large resource record setback.
That's clear. Mm-hmm. And the __sip_h323_message labels are found in some list.
Or? Yeah, the E2U plus SIP, there is in the existing enum specification, there is an IANA registry of those flags.
That exists.
So there's we already have an existing registration mechanism. Yes. Okay.
No further questions. Good.
Let's just decide. No more questions.
We're almost done, but there are two more items on the agenda. So applause for Patrick first. I see there are people arriving for the next meeting, which begins in 5 minutes. So I have 1 minute to process the two agenda items, which are item X, input-output with other working groups. And I will alert the database working group and the NCC services working group as action item 53.3 that we expect soon to have consensus on the non-registry issue. And that disposes of item X. And item Z, I know of one item under any other business, which is people have shown some interest in getting the graphic that was on the t-shirt, and they'll find that on Rosie. And if anybody has any other items for agenda item Z, I suggest they bring them up on the list. Thank you all for your patience, and my apologies again for running so late. Thank you.
Wil je eigenlijk op kwijt, Henk?
Ja, ik is goed.
Oké, is goed.
Ja, nou, ik heb absoluut niet.